So when your phone buzzes, right, and a really specific name pops up on your lock screen, your brain does this instant, totally invisible calculus. You don't even really have to think about it at all.
Oh, yeah, like zero conscious effort.
Exactly. You immediately pull up this entire mental file on that person. Like, you know their tone, you know your history with them, the specific kind of jokes they make, even the literal rhythm of how they text.
Right.
There's just this really deep psychological certainty attached to that little notification bubble.
Because it's a firmly anchored reality, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you are holding a physical device made of glass and metal, sure. But that notification represents a real one-to-one connection with another actual physical human being somewhere out in the world.
Yeah, and that certainty is basically the baseline of modern communication. But and this is where it gets interesting. The very moment you step into the world of AI companions or, chatbots, that entire psychological landscape just gets incredibly
Oh,
murky.
for sure. It completely fractures.
Because you're looking at a screen, you're reading a message, and part of your brain absolutely knows it's just, code rendering text on a display. Yet there's this other part of your brain that is deeply immersed in the illusion that there is a literal someone on the other end. And it feels completely real right up until the exact moment that some tiny, stupid inconsistency shatters the glass and you are just jolted right back to reality.
Yeah, the illusion is incredibly fragile.
It really is. So today we have this absolutely fascinating stack of source material that digs right into the heart of that fragile illusion. We are doing a deep dive into a set of developer notes and release documentation for an AI system called Mio.
Specifically looking at their version 0.1.2 update, right?
Yes, exactly. The 0.1.2 update. And our goal for you today is to basically figure out how these tiny, seemingly invisible technical things as completely mundane as routing a server differently or adjusting a really basic math formula.
Stuff the user never sees.
Right. How those tweaks can fundamentally rewire your brain's perception of a digital entity. We are looking at the exact mechanics of making an AI actually feel like a real person living inside your messaging app.
Such a wild concept to try and engineer.
It really is. Okay, let's unpack this because the very first barrier the Mio developers had to demolish was this massive structural problem they referred to as shared identity.
And that core issue of identity, honestly, that is the perfect starting point.
Yeah.
Because if the structural framing of who you are talking to is broken from the jump, I mean, the entire illusion just collapses before the conversation even really begins.
So let's paint a picture for you of the before and after regarding Mio's integration with the messaging app Telegram. So in the older version, version 0.1.0, the developers had actually already figured out how to give these AI personas really distinct voices.
Yeah, the generation was already pretty good.
Right. You could talk to a character who sounded like this really upbeat college student, and then you could talk to a character who sounded like a, I don't know, a cynical detective. But there was this massive, glaring catch. They all lived inside one single Telegram bot.
Right, it was all centralized.
Yeah. So to talk to a different persona, you had to physically open this one unified chat window, bring up a menu, and literally type a command to switch out the personality.
Which means you were just operating a software interface. It felt,
Ew.
I guess it felt like changing the input source on a television
Yeah.
rather than actually dialing a new phone number.
That's a great way to put it. I was thinking of it like, okay, think of it like going to a live comedy club to see a ventriloquist.
Okay, I like that.
So the ventriloquist has this giant wooden trunk filled with all these different puppets, right? One is a grumpy old man, one's a flamboyant diva, one's a talking dog. And the performer is incredibly talented, and the voices all sound totally distinct. But no matter which puppet is sitting on the stool at any given moment, you are always acutely aware that they all came out of the exact same wooden trunk, operated by the exact same human hand.
Yeah, exactly. You never actually believe you are talking to a grumpy old man. You inherently know you're talking to a performer who is just temporarily simulating that character.
Right. And the developer notes address this explicitly. Like, they realize that forcing a user to manually switch personas completely shattered any suspension of disbelief. You weren't talking to the character Keek. You were interacting with a centralized system that was just temporarily putting on a Keek mask.
And that is a fatal flaw for an AI companion.
So the fix in version 0.1.2 was to basically smash the wooden trunk entirely. They decided to give every single persona their own separate Telegram bot.
Which is huge.
Yeah. No more menus, no more switching commands, just a completely independent bot with its own unique profile picture, its own name, and its own dedicated chat thread just sitting there in your app. But okay, putting on my software architecture hat for a second here, setting up and maintaining dozens or maybe even hundreds of separate bots sounds like an absolute back-end nightmare. I mean, managing a single centralized app is standard practice for a reason, right? Why endure the massive headache of splintering everything across Telegram like that?
Well, it undeniably introduces a whole new layer of back-end complexity. There's no doubt about that. But what's fascinating here is the really elegant way they solve that infrastructure problem. They manage this massive splintering using a single comma-separated environment variable.
Okay, let's break that down for the listener who, you know, doesn't spend their weekends coding server backends. What does that actually look like in practice?
Sure. So think of an environment variable as a set of master instructions that get handed to the server the literal second it wakes up. In this specific case, it's just a long text string of different bot tokens, all separated by commas, sort of like a guest list for a VIP party.
Okay.
On startup, the server reads this list, loops through every single token one by one, and registers a unique webhook for each individual bot.
And a webhook is basically, it's essentially a dedicated delivery address, right?
That is a perfect way to visualize it, yeah. It's like giving each character their own dedicated apartment buzzer on the front of a really large building.
Oh, I see.
So when Telegram receives a message for a specific bot, it presses that specific buzzer. The server hears the buzzer, it looks at the route parameter, which basically tells it exactly which apartment was just buzzed, and it knows precisely which character that message is meant for.
Okay, that makes sense. But wait, if everyone in the world is messaging these same bots, how does the server keep my conversation with the AI separate from your conversation with the exact same AI?
Okay. That is handled through something called a composite key. The system takes the bot's identity and literally fuses it together with your unique user identity to create this brand new, highly specific lock.
So it's locking us in a room together, basically.
Effectively, yes. This means your chat history, your context buffers, your entire digital relationship, it's all completely isolated in a private room that only ever opens when both your ID and the boss ID are present together.
Wow.
And furthermore, they enforce a very strict constraint on the system. It's one persona per bot per user, period. You cannot bind two different personas to the same bot.
Really?
Yeah. If you look at their preset selection screen in the documentation, personas that another user has already claimed show up clearly marked as Yi Bang Ding, which translates from Chinese to bound, with a distinct check mark next to them.
So they are essentially enforcing digital monogamy for these specific instances.
Very much.
But this brings me back to my core question. I mean, they engineered this incredibly intricate system of apartment buzzers and composite keys and environment variables just to avoid having a drop-down menu. The psychological payoff must be just massive to justify that kind of engineering cost.
Oh, the payoff is an entirely new paradigm of user experience. Because by moving the persona into a dedicated bot, the AI transcends being just a feature of a software platform. It literally becomes an entity in your actual contacts list.
Yeah, that's true.
It sits right there on your screen, you know, literally sandwiched between a text from your mom and a group chat with your coworkers.
That's kind of wild to think about.
When your phone buzzes, the notification doesn't say Mio system message anymore. It just shows the character's name and their picture. The chat history belongs solely to them. It completely reframes the entire digital geography for the user.
You are physically placing the AI into the exact same digital neighborhood where the user interacts with real human beings.
Exactly.
But I will say, just having a dedicated profile picture and a private chat thread doesn't magically make the illusion hold up. Because if that profile acts like a robot, the spell breaks instantly anyway. Which I think plunges us right into the next massive hurdle these developers faced. The documentation called it the problem of dumb timing.
Right, because establishing the physical presence of a contact is only step one. How that contact actually chooses to utilize your time is what defines the real boundaries of the relationship.
And this brings up the concept of proactive messaging. Even in the older version, the Mio system was designed to occasionally send you messages unprompted just to, you know, keep the conversation alive.
Mm-hmm.
But the fatal flaw was that the system was totally blind to the context of who it was supposed to be. Every single persona messaged the user at the exact same mathematically rigid frequency.
And just imagine the real-world equivalent of that for a second. Imagine if your spouse your dentist, your childhood best friend, and like the barista you made small talk with once all decided to text you at the exact same interval.
That would feel deeply unnatural. You would feel like you were trapped inside a simulation or something.
Right.
The developers clearly realized that uniform timing absolutely destroys the illusion of an individual personality. So in version 0.1.2, they introduce this fascinating layer of invisible math to govern exactly when the AI decides to reach out.
Yeah, the math here is so clever.
They made the timing a function of two distinct variables. First, you have the relationship type, which acts as a base cooldown timer. And second, you have the persona's actual personality, which acts as a multiplier. And they call this the eagerness factor.
Yeah. The math is beautifully simple, but the behavioral output it creates is incredibly complex. Let's look at the base cooldowns first, which are categorized by intimacy.
Okay.
If the relationship is defined as lovers, the base cooldown is set to 1 hour. Close friends is 4 hours. Friends is 8 hours. And just met is 12 hours.
Okay, that structure makes intuitive sense. Obviously, a romantic partner naturally has way more access to your time and attention than some acquaintance you just met at a party.
Naturally.
But the base cooldown alone is still too rigid, right? Like, not all partners text every hour. That is where the eagerness multiplier completely changes the game.
Let's actually run the numbers on this using two very different personas detailed in the source notes.
Let's do it.
First, we have a character named Xiaoqi. Her personality profile is defined as highly expressive and, well, clingy. So the developers gave her an eagerness factor of 0.6. On the other hand, we have Saru, a character whose profile is reserved, quiet, and very measured. She gets an eagerness factor of 1.6.
Okay, let's do the math on those two extremes. If you configure Xiaoqi as your partner, you take that 1 hour lover cooldown and you multiply it by her 0.6 eagerness factor. That calculation means Xiaoqi is going to proactively text you every 36 minutes.
Yep.
Now contrast that with the reserved Saru. If you set Saru as someone you quote unquote just met, you take that 12 hour base cooldown and multiply it by her 1.6 factor. Saru is only going to reach out every 19.2 hours.
Exactly. It is the exact same underlying software system running the exact same core formula, but it yields two vastly different behavioral rhythms.
It's brilliant.
Xiaoqi feels ever-present, you know, demanding your attention, heavily invested in your day, while Saru feels unhurried, polite, purposefully maintaining this very respectful distance.
But here's where it gets really interesting. Because while the math is very clever, I kind of have to push back on the reality of that Xiaoqi example.
Okay, why is that?
Because getting an unprompted text message every 36 minutes from an AI does not sound like a fun, immersive digital romance to me.
No.
No. It sounds like absolute borderline stalker harassment. If my phone is buzzing every half hour with an AI asking what I had for lunch or why I'm not responding yet, I'm going to delete that bot before the afternoon is even over. How does the back end prevent this clingy math from turning into just a massive annoyance for the listener?
Well, the developers actually anticipated that exact friction point.
Yeah.
They built in a really critical safety valve within the configuration files, specifically a file called proactive.json-f, which establishes hard daily rate limit.
Oh, okay. So a ceiling on the behavior.
Exactly. A ceiling. The math might dictate that Xiaoqi's personality physically compels her to text you every 36 minutes, but the proactive.json file caps her actual output at a maximum of 12 messages per day.
Okay, that is much more manageable.
Right. The developer notes make a very astute observation here. They wrote, there's eager, and then there's harassment.
Yeah, no kidding.
The right limit allows the system to simulate the feeling of a clingy personality without crossing the line into a literal denial of service attack on your phone's notification center.
Which is crucial.
And the core philosophy driving this entire update is that the frequency itself is the relationship. The mathematical formulas completely disappear behind the personality, leaving the user with a behavioral cadence that perfectly matches their human expectations of that specific dynamic.
That phrase, the frequency is the relationship, is just a wild lens to look through because we don't consciously think about our real world friendships in terms of cooldown timers and eagerness multipliers, you know?
Well, of course not.
But maybe we actually do operate on those exact mechanics. We just internalize the math instead of literally writing it down in a JSON file.
I mean, we all maintain internal unspoken rhythms with the people in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
We all know exactly who texts back immediately and who is going to take 3 business days to reply to a simple question.
We really do. But, you know, sending texts and establishing a rhythm is really only one half of human communication. The true test of any relationship, whether it's digital or physical, isn't just how someone acts when you text them. It is how they react when you don't text back.
Oh, absolutely. Which brings us to the really fascinating challenge of reading the silence.
Yes.
The source material actually highlights a direct complaint from a user regarding the older version of the system. This user stated, "Your current frequency is too spammy. There should be some sort of exponential back off, like a real human who's not going to keep bothering you if you don't reply for a long time."
And that user articulated a fundamental flaw in the illusion perfectly. Because real people adjust their behavior based on your lack of response.
Right.
Like, if I text a friend and they ignore me, I might try again a few hours later. But eventually, if the silence just stretches on, I am going to stop texting them. I'm not stopping because I suddenly dislike them. I'm stopping because I am reading the social cues.
Exactly. The challenge for the developers, though, was translating that highly nuanced social cue, basically reading the room, into executable code.
Right. How do you code that?
Well, in version 0.1.2, they implemented a remarkably strict rule. After exactly 3 unanswered proactive messages, the agent goes completely silent.
Just dead silent.
Yep. The system tracks a consecutive unanswered message counter. And once it hits 3, messaging is totally suspended. The moment you finally send a reply, the counter resets to 0, and the AI just resumes its normal mathematical rhythm with 0 grudge and absolutely no passive-aggressive guilt trip about where you have been.
But I want to challenge this specific implementation, though, because it seems to completely ignore the user's actual request. The user explicitly asked for exponential backoff.
They did.
And in traditional software engineering, exponential backoff is a standard practice for managing failures, right? Like, if a web browser tries to connect to a crashed server, it doesn't just hammer the server endlessly.
No, that would crash it further.
Right. It tries once, waits 1 minute, tries again, waits 5 minutes, then 20 minutes, then an hour. It creates this really smooth, mathematically decaying curve of attempts. So why did the Mio developers completely ignore that standard proven software approach and implement this brutal hard cutoff at exactly 3 messages?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the rejection of exponential backoff actually makes perfect sense. Because the goal of this system is not to build a polite piece of software network architecture. The goal is to simulate a human being.
Okay, fair.
And humans do not utilize probability curves and smooth mathematical decay when they are texting their friends.
Yeah, we certainly don't pull out a graphing calculator to figure out our next text interval when we get left on read.
Exactly. When you ignore a real human 3 times in a row, they don't consciously decide, ah, I will now increase my interval between text messages by a factor of 2.
And they stop.
They just stop reaching out. They assume you are busy or you're annoyed or asleep, and they just give up.
Yeah.
So a hard cutoff at 3 messages actually mirrors reality far better than a gradual software decay ever would.
Wow, yeah.
It fundamentally shifts the AI from acting like an algorithmic push notification into behaving like an entity that actually respects your physical space and your time.
It's incredibly counterintuitive when you think about it. A rigid binary rule, literally a line of code that just says, if counter equals 3, then stop, somehow feels vastly more human than a sophisticated mathematical curve.
It creates a really powerful illusion of empathy.
Yeah. The bot is effectively communicating, I see you're busy, I'll back off. And it is doing that by doing absolutely nothing at all.
However, that illusion of empathy is heavily reliant on a structural foundation we haven't even discussed yet.
Okay, let's get into it.
Because to pull off these highly specific human behaviors, knowing precisely whether to be clingy based on a lover dynamic or knowing when to respect your silence, the system requires absolute, unshakable certainty about the narrative context.
Which introduces the final and honestly perhaps the most surprising major change in the 0.1.2 update. Because to achieve that absolute certainty, the developers had to do something that feels very, very backwards in the current era of technology.
Mm-hmm.
They had to aggressively take power away from the user.
It is a brilliant example of the classic tension in software design applied directly to generative AI.
So in the older version, the onboarding process was very open-ended. Users could utilize these custom free text fields to define their relationship with the bot and invent all these elaborate backstories. You could literally type whatever crazy scenario you wanted into a blank box.
You had total freedom.
Total freedom. But in version 0.1.2, the developers completely disabled those free text fields. They just wiped them out. Instead, they force users to pick from a preset menu using strict confirm only buttons.
Right. and the developer notes provide a perfect case study of why this open-ended freedom was actually destroying the product. They cite this specific clash where a user typed into the custom backstory field, "We met at a bar in Shanghai."
Which honestly sounds like a great starting point for a roleplay scenario.
On the surface, yes, it does. But it fundamentally breaks the meticulously crafted narrative of a preset persona like Cake. Cake's entire core identity, her vocabulary, her references, they are all built around the strict fact that she is a Taipei girl who has never left Taiwan.
Oh, I see.
Right, so when a user is allowed to inject contradictory facts, like meeting in a bar in Shanghai, the AI model gets horribly confused trying to reconcile its core instructions with the user's prompt.
It breaks its own brain.
Exactly. The narrative fractures, the personality becomes super inconsistent, and the illusion of a coherent individual just falls apart entirely.
So what does this all mean for the listener who is using these tools? I have to play devil's advocate here for a second.
Go for it.
Isn't the primary appeal of modern generative AI that it offers infinite freedom? Like, you can build any world, roleplay any scenario, go absolutely anywhere your imagination take you.
Yeah.
By ripping away the text box and forcing the user to click these preset buttons like close friend or acquaintance, aren't the developers putting the user into a really rigid, boring box? Doesn't that defeat the entire magic of generative AI?
Well, this raises an important question about what users actually value more in an AI companion.
Mm-hmm.
Do they want absolute narrative freedom, or do they want absolute narrative coherence?
Okay.
The Mio developer has made a hard pivot toward coherence. And to understand why, we really have to look at the difference between structured and unstructured data.
Right, the back-end stuff again.
Yeah. When a user types a messy, sprawling paragraph into a free text field, that is unstructured data. It is basically like a junk drawer full of random items.
Right.
The AI has to dig through that junk drawer and just sort of guess what the relationship is supposed to be.
And an AI guessing your relationship status sounds like a recipe for a very, very weird conversation.
Precisely. By removing the custom text fields and forcing simple button clicks, the relationship type is no longer a messy paragraph. It becomes structured data.
Right.
It gets saved as a discrete, perfectly reliable column in the agent's database. It's no longer a junk drawer. It is a meticulously organized filing cabinet.
Ah, I see the angle there. It transforms a vague story into hard executable data.
Exactly. And that predictable data structure is the literal only way the downstream features can actually function.
Because of the math.
Yes. Think back to the brilliant proactive messaging math we broke down earlier, taking the base cooldowns and multiplying them by the eagerness factors.
Mm.
You physically cannot run that math if the system doesn't have mathematical certainty about the relationship. If the relationship field contains a paragraph that says, "We are kind of frenemies who met at a coffee shop in Seattle," what is the base cooldown for that?
The system has no idea. The math completely breaks down.
The math breaks, the timing reverts to dumb, rigid intervals, and the illusion of a unique personality just shatters. By restricting user input, the developers are actually protecting the integrity of the database.
Which protects the math.
Right. Protecting the database protects the math. And protecting the math protects the psychological illusion. In this specific ecosystem, less choice directly translates to a much more believable, cohesive experience.
It is a totally fascinating trade-off when you look at it from that perspective. You surrender the ability to say you met in a bar in Shanghai. But in exchange for that restriction, you get an AI companion that actually possesses the spatial awareness to know when to text you and the engineered empathy to know when to leave you alone.
Exactly.
You are trading infinite imagination for a tangible behavioral reality.
It is a heavily curated reality, yes, but it is one that feels significantly more grounded and authentic to the human brain.
Looking back at this entire journey through the 0.1.2 update, I mean, it truly is a masterclass in psychological engineering. We started by taking the AI out of a shared, centralized software menu and giving it a dedicated Telegram bot, completely transforming it from a tool into a discrete contact.
Yep. And then we saw how they deployed that invisible math, combining the relationship depth with personality multipliers to mimic the suffocating clinginess of an eager partner or, you know, the polite hesitation of an acquaintance.
Then we looked at how they hard-coded the concept of empathy by implementing a strict three-message cutoff, allowing the bot to seemingly read the silence and respect your digital space, completely avoiding those complex probability curves.
And finally, we explored the counterintuitive decision to strip away user freedom during onboarding, proving that sometimes locking down the narrative with structured data is the absolute only way to make the illusion structurally sound enough to support the math in the first place.
It really makes you pause and consider how these back-end tricks fundamentally alter your perception of the technology sitting in your pocket right now. When you strip it all down, it is just webhooks, environment variables, simple cooldown formulas, and structured database columns.
Just code.
Just code. But when all of those discrete technical components work together in perfect harmony, they transmute cold code into a companion. It stops feeling like an application you are operating, and it genuinely starts feeling like someone who actually cares about your time.
I agree completely. But, you know, I think there is a deeper, perhaps slightly unsettling question hidden in the margins of this source material.
Okay.
We have spent this entire deep dive marveling at how cleverly these developers have managed to program the nuances of human behavior into a machine. Let's flip that perspective for just a moment.
I'm very curious where you are taking this.
If a developer can perfectly map the complex cadences of human intimacy, the polite hesitations of brand new friendship, and the respectful boundaries of giving someone space, and if they can convincingly simulate all of that using just a few simple lines of JSON map and cooldown timers, what does that actually reveal about us?
Oh, wow.
What does it say about how algorithmic, how mathematically predictable our own real-world human relationships actually are?
That is a staggering thought. Are we all just walking around operating on our own internal cooldown timers and eagerness multipliers, completely unaware of our own programming?
Makes you wonder.
That is a concept that is going to echo in my head every single time my phone buzzes with a new text. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We will catch you next time.